Hello and welcome to the 23rd episode of the Crystal Clear Watchmaking Podcast. I'm your host Luke, here with my co-host Jay. How are you doing, Jay?
Yeah, not bad. How are you?
I'm doing well, and I've got some updates slash watch news type stuff.
Okay, I sort of do too.
Okay, I'll just throw out one here. So
yeah, you go.
You know how we've promised to always say when we were wrong about something, right?
That's I think that's a good policy.
Yeah, so here's something that someone sent in, which I really liked.
Okay.
You know how I said that the Raketa watches, some of them looked like they had more shock jewels than they needed?
Yeah, yeah.
And so basically this guy sent in a little message. He said that these are settings for cap jewels, and the idea was that these were basically to help keep the oil in place and keep the dust from getting in the lubrication. And so the shock jewel kind of does that naturally. And then the wheel right next to that is usually the one that you see it on. That one mm-hmm. spins pretty fast too, so the oil is more important, and then the other ones don't have it. Oh. Now today, meaningless, I don't think anyone does these, which is why they kind of confused me. Yeah. It was kind of like a bit of a phase. And nowadays, we use something called epilame, which is, and there's a couple other versions of it. But what it does is it changes the surface property of the jewel, and it makes it so that the jewel kind of like sticks to oil better. The oil doesn't want to run off. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And our cases are also, like, much finer machined now, and so less stuff is getting into them. So you basically right. don't see these on modern watches whatsoever.
Yeah, because there's newer methods to accomplish the same thing.
Yeah, and our oils are better. So right. so basically, it seems like they're not really useful anymore, but the other place where you saw them a bit more was Seiko. They mm-hmm. had the DiaShock stuff for the balance, and they did DiaFix is what they called them. Hmm. So anyway, just wanted to talk about that. I thought it was a little bit of an interesting twist on my observation and something to learn.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Raketa, I noticed on our Instagram you had a lot more Raketa watches posted than you actually talked about. Like there yeah. was like you have like a lot big collection.
Well, you see, I've been trying to post every day.
Yeah.
I figure I've got some free time now. There's no reason I shouldn't just post every day. And what I've been doing is, you know how I told you that I was selling off the collection?
Mm-hmm.
So I took some nice pictures for that.
Okay.
And then I took all the pictures that I took for all the watches that I sold, and then I put them on my phone. So okay. now I can pump out some content. I've got some pictures.
So you may not own the watch anymore because you sold it.
Yeah, a lot of them aren't in the collection anymore, but you know, they're new pictures and
yeah.
they're pretty unique. They're ones that people haven't seen
for
before.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. I saw some of them. I was like, this is interesting.
Yeah, also we're officially influencers. I wanted to let you know because
How does one cross the threshold between being one and not?
It's when you see something change in real life because of what you said. Okay?
Okay.
So okay. when I was editing our episode, I was like, okay, I'm going to look at what Raketa Atoms are on eBay.
Yeah.
And then I found one that was in good condition. Yeah. Just one.
Yeah. Yeah, that one is the one that we found that was like one of the most interesting of the ones you had talked about.
Exactly. And then I could tell you that the Russian watch market on eBay, it's pretty big, but it's very slow moving. Very okay. slow moving.
Well, do most of them actually come from Russia? Like, were the sellers?
A lot of them get sold out of the Ukraine, actually.
Oh, that makes sense.
And then Russia is probably the second most voluminous. Okay. And I don't know why that is.
Well, Ukraine was used to be part of Russia, right? So.
Yeah, but you'd think that Russia would still have more Russian watches than the Ukraine to sell on
yeah.
eBay.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of unsure why that is. But after we published the episode, in the next couple days, it was sold. Which,
well, is that your influence or is that just coincidence?
I feel like it might be us. Because, like, okay, back when I was crazy into Russian watches, I'd have, like, watch list of, like, 50 watches. Yeah. And, you know, over the course of, like, multiple weeks, only one of them would sell. You know what I'm saying? It's very slow moving. So we mentioned this watch, and then, like, the next day it's gone on eBay. I feel like that might be us.
Yeah, that's true.
If you're listening and you're the one that bought it, message us on Instagram.
We did pump the tires of the Atom a lot.
We did, and it is a sweet watch, so I hope whoever got it enjoys it.
Yeah.
And then I had bought that non-working pocket watch that had the broken balance staff.
I did see those pictures on Instagram. It looked really good. I don't know if this is the one you're talking about, but you did the before and after picture on one of them?
That one is actually for another pocket watch that I bought. $40. Okay. It was $40 shipped from Canada. Okay.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So a really good deal. Dial, completely immaculate. Cleaned it up. It's working great. Ticking away over on my bench right now. A really huge pleasure to work with. And I just really find that I'm enjoying the pocket watch thing. But I am going to limit myself. I can't buy another, like, multiple pocket watches. Because I'm just not going to use them, like.
They're so cheap, though, it sounds like.
They are. I do have one on my buy list, on my watch list on eBay that's $200. It's pretty sweet, though. but we'll see. We'll see. We'll see. If I ended up buying it, then I'll let you know.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. I'd like to see the difference in quality between a less than $40 one and a $200 one.
That's the amazing thing. The $40 one is maybe just a hair lower quality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's one of those, like, 90% there kind of things where it's like you spend an extra so much just for a little bit better.
Yeah, because with pocket watches, it's like there's tons in the average range, and there's just, like, a few models that are, like, interesting enough that people will actually spend money on them.
Right.
Like, I saw a salesman's version, which salesman means exhibition case back on a pocket watch.
Oh, what a
weird term. Over 100 years old. That's pretty awesome. Right. So yeah. I saw a salesman's version of a doctor's pocket watch where...
What makes it a doctor's one? It does have that bezel with the heart rate or whatever?
No, it doesn't have the pulse meter. What makes it the doctor's pocket watch is that instead of sub-seconds, it has center seconds so that the seconds are easier to read. And all of the seconds are, like, individually tick marked so that you can get more accurate, like, pulse readings and all that sort of jazz.
Interesting.
You know, one of the things that I've been wondering is nobody's going out to buy stuff. So ADs, if they got anything in, they have to make the calls, right?
Well, interestingly,
have you gotten one for your Black Bay? That's what I'm getting.
Okay, to answer that question, no. I did have the same line of thinking as you. But another thing is, like, remember I told you how my wife's sister had bought the Rolex in Hawaii?
Yeah.
And then put our names down for, like, the GMT and stuff. So her husband wanted the Sea Dweller or something.
Okay, yeah.
And they actually called them and said, hey, it's in, during this whole coronavirus thing.
Wow.
Yeah. But then you couldn't go there because right? Like, you're not going to risk. And so they're like, yeah, it's here, but no one's flying here right now. So if you want it, come get it. Otherwise, we can sell it to you, but then you'd have to pay the California tax, which defeats the whole purpose of buying in Hawaii in the first place.
Well, I don't know. The other purpose of buying it is to get the AD
to get
cost.
It. Yeah.
You know, because you're paying less than the secondary market anyway.
Yeah, but he wasn't that gung-ho. He just kind of put his name down on it and was like, so he passed on it.
Okay.
So, but he got the call, so.
All right. Well, maybe one day your Black Bay is going to happen, but I'm believing in it less and less.
Well, I mean,
it got mentioned in our first episode. It is now 23 episodes later.
It's the long-running joke of the podcast.
So
the other thing I was going to say is that I've been playing, I play computer games, so I've been playing Call of Duty Warzone, which is basically like Fortnite, but like Call of Duty.
Yeah, I heard it was actually surprisingly good.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, if you're into FPSs, and it's free, so that's nice. But the thing is, like, you can, like, this comes back to our subject area, because you can buy, like, digital watches. Like, you can buy, like, little trinkets, and it has, like, watches, which is, like, totally, like, not functional to the game at all, but like when you're carrying the gun in the game, you can see a bit of the wrist and you can change your watch on there. And it's like, there's a market. Like, if you get like the battle pass, which is like the subscription where you actually do pay, you can get, you know, a nicer watch as one of the perks.
That's hilarious.
So I thought that might be a trend in gaming or something. I don't know. It reminds me of like Magic cards when before you had like the actual card and that was all the worth, but then they had digital cards after.
Maybe there'll be a sponsorship by some company to get the their watch into Call of Duty.
It's just the
a Richard meal.
Yeah, and then it's just like the all these digital goods now that everyone's like staying home.
Yeah,
it's interesting. The market, how that's evolving.
So, do you have any other watch news?
No, not really. That was it.
Okay, well, I'm just going to jump right into the topic then. So the topic for this week is kind of non-standard movements. So the two movement types that we talk about all the time are mechanical, which gets the lion's share of all of our attention.
Right.
And then the quartz. Now,
yeah,
we have an episode on mechanical versus quartz, and
That was a good episode.
It was a great episode, and if you want to learn how quartz works, which quartz is going to sneak back into this episode for sure, but if you want to know about how it works, we talk about how they literally grow the crystals. We tell you how they grow the crystals in the labs. So we went deep on that episode.
I didn't even know they did that until we talked about it.
Exactly, yeah. So that episode's definitely worth taking a peek at. Definitely supplementary material for this one. And with that said, let me just jump right into it. Now, the first thing that I want to talk about are mechanical watches. And what I'd say here is the big thing in mechanical watches is other types of escapements. So what you see all the time is a Swiss lever escapement. The Tourbillon actually has a slightly different escapement. It's not a standard, because, you know, they always say about how it's like a Swiss lever escapement that's in a cage that's turning.
Right.
So what I'd say is that it's actually kind of untrue, because, like, the way that an escapement is usually set up is that the escape wheel, the pallet fork, and the balance wheel are all in a straight line.
Right.
But when you do a Tourbillon, the escape wheel turning is, like, perpendicular to the pallet fork.
Right.
And so it's got, like, a spring in there, something to return the pallet fork to the same position. I don't even really know it too well, I'll be honest.
But, yes, it's like there's so many definitions of how you categorize things as like, you know, it's like, is it mechanical? Is it not mechanical?
Yeah, and so what I'd say is there's actually a ton of different escapement types, like dozens. But some of them, for example, have problems with self-starting. So if you wind it, it doesn't necessarily go. You might have to give it a little shake, you know, to get it started.
Yeah,
right. There could be positional problems, like in certain positions it stops working, or it's just way inefficient, or like tons of friction, so it wears out parts really fast.
Yeah.
And all of them are hard to describe and also ultra nerdy. So these are basically topics that, like, MB&F and places like that these are the types of things that they think about for inspiration to make their crazy ass watches.
Right.
But I feel like it's almost impossible to describe, and ultra nerdy and equation-y, and you need, like, some engineer sketches. So we're going to just breeze over all of the different escapement types, but we are admitting that they exist, and they could definitely be a part of the podcast.
Okay.
So what I'm going to do instead is I'm just going to jump ahead and talk about oyster quartz. Okay.
About which, sorry?
Oyster quartz.
Oyster quartz, okay.
So what I'm going to do...
I haven't even heard the term before.
Yeah, well, it's pretty unknown. But what I think is going to be fun is I'm going to give examples of all of these. So when you think about collecting, you can say, oh, that's pretty cool. You know, I'd like to collect one of those. So we're not just going to talk about the mechanism. We'll give some watch examples to throw in there.
Okay.
So Rolex flirted with quartz. Okay. But it's not a standard quartz setup. Because the standard quartz setup is the step motor is directly attached to, like, the seconds hand, right?
Right.
And that's what causes the jumps forward. Now, the oyster quartz is different. So the way that it works is it's got a pulse motor that's actually hitting a pallet fork, and the pallet fork interacts with the pallet wheel, which is attached to the seconds hand, I believe. And then there's a gear train for the rest of the other two hands.
Okay. Right.
And also for turning the date. So the difference, the big difference is that when you see quartz hands move, they look like they jump and they kind of like waver just the tiniest bit for the tiniest millisecond at the end. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, if you look real close, it just, but with the oyster quartz, every jump of the seconds hand is like solid.
Oh, okay.
It's actually like a mechanical way of doing the whole quartz thing in a sense.
But the mechanical sweep of the seconds hands is just smoother, right?
Way smoother. Like, so yeah, this still does the 1 per second tick.
Right, right, okay.
But that one tick is like solid.
Interesting.
Yeah. Now the other interesting thing about it is they really actually decorated the movement. It's got anglage, perlage, it's got Geneva stripes. So for a very, very long time, is the best looking quartz movement available. Of course, now we have Grand Seiko. They make some very nice quartz movements these days. So it's not necessarily the nicest looking, because I think Grand Seiko probably does take the lead on that now.
Yeah, but this is a Rolex.
Yeah, exactly. And but Rolex movement finishing has never been a priority for Rolex, because they always have solid case backs.
Yeah, exactly, which is weird.
Minor exceptions.
You know what this watch reminds me of?
What?
Oh,
I was going to say.
You're right.
Yeah.
Just looking at the edges, you can, like, it's brushed.
Yeah, this is kind of for you. It looks a little Gerald Genta-y before Gerald Genta ever.
Yes.
Designed
very model. It's and the bracelet too, it looks like.
Oh yeah, right? I think the bracelet's really where it's at, like where the bracelet meets the case, that just feels very Gerald Genta. But the interesting thing is, so we're and I want to describe the watches more in the podcast. It's one of the things that somebody asked us to do for them, because we always add the pictures for links, but I would like people to know. So it basically looks like a Datejust, but with like a little bit of Gerald Genta-y design, but other than that, it's just a Datejust. And they also did the Day-Date version in oyster quartz. Now the interesting thing about these is that they only ever made, estimates are around 25,000 in Rolex terms, that's like none. You know. And you can get them, I'd say median price is around 4K, but you can get as low as like 2.5K for one of these.
Really? Interesting.
So it's very cheap for Rolex, very like small production, a unique movement. I don't know. I'm not saying invest, because I think that's, I don't want to be in charge of your money. You know what I'm saying?
Right. But there's so many unique things going for this watch. Like just for the look of it, I think it's very unique.
Yeah,
A Rolex watch.
You're 100% on. And they even did full gold versions, too.
Right.
Which, of course, you have to pay for the gold there, so you're not going to get it for $2,500. So our next one. So I just wanted to throw the oyster quartz out there. I don't think it's hugely different from regular quartz, but it is enough different.
It's unique.
That it's, you know, kind of interesting. So next we have the Mecha Quartz. Okay.
What is that? That sounds Japanese off the top of my head.
Well, I can tell you most of them are these days.
Okay.
Mecha Quartz, it's kind of like a hybrid car, okay? And these are for chronographs, okay? Chronographs only, that's all that this is. Okay. So the things that are different between a regular chronograph and a quartz one when you're using it is a quartz one, when you hit the reset, the seconds hand doesn't just snap back. You know, it slowly moves around the dial and resets to zero, right? Whereas the mechanical ones, they just snap to zero.
Yes.
The press is just you pressing like a little button, you know, on a circuit. So there's no like mechanical like snap when you're pressing down.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the other one is the quick ticking instead of the once per second ticks. Right.
Yeah.
Now, the interesting thing about the Mecha Quartz is all of the mechanical parts of the chronograph are held in the Mecha Quartz. So the way that it works is normally a quartz chronograph, what they do is they have a separate step motor for all of the different sub-dials and the main, right?
Okay, yeah.
And then they just turn on each step motor as needed, right, to move the hands.
Right, right.
Mecha Quartz, they actually only have one step motor in the center there, moving the seconds wheel, basically.
Yeah.
And then they build a mechanical chronograph movement on top of that. Okay?
Okay.
So all of the chronograph stuff is mechanical, which is why it resets instantly. You get the mechanical press of the button. You get the little ticks, you know, like 8 times per second or whatever.
Right.
So it's kind of like a hybrid car or something like that.
Yeah.
So it gives you a lot of the things that you like about a chronograph and a lot of things that you hate about a quartz chronograph. You're kind of getting the best of both worlds in a way.
I guess that's, why they would develop something like that. I'm going to look up.
Yeah, now I've got one to send to you here.
Okay. I was just going to look it up.
So this guy's a bit of a small independent watch brand.
Cool.
Brew Watches.
Yeah.
And I could tell you, like, all Mecha Quartz today are made by Seiko. They're the Seiko VK63, 67, and 83 are the different caliber numbers.
Right.
But back in the day, Breitling, Omega, Chopard, Bulgari, Jaeger LeCoultre, IWC, they all had made Mecha Quartz watches.
Interesting. This is a pretty nice watch, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Brew Watches is actually pretty sweet.
So forever, this is the cobalt, they're saying, the retrograph cobalt.
Yeah, and basically, Brew Watches has a bit more of a rectangular design. It's got the date at 6, regular chronograph sub-dials, and
it's got like glowing hands. If you look at the fourth picture, it's almost like neon.
Oh, yeah, that's... I don't know, that might just be... Oh, no, it looks like that. It looks like a very generous amounts of lume are applied to the hour and minute hand.
You think that's all it is? It also looks like it's like glowing from underneath the hand, too.
Yeah, that's just what it looks like when you have crazy amounts of lume.
I'm sure they photographed it, like they increased the highlights and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. But it is pretty cool. Sunburst, blue dial. I'd say that as far as chronographs go, this is on the dressier side.
Yeah, well, for sure, yeah.
It
reminds me of those older Seikos that look like the 70s TV, kind of. It looks like a TV set.
Sure, yeah. So yeah, Mecha Quartz, a little bit of a different setup, and gives you the things that you like about a mechanical chronograph. So next, we're on a bit of a roll here, Kinetic Quartz.
Okay, so I've heard of this.
So this really started, in my opinion, the first step was the Seiko 8T23-8020, which the nickname for that is the full charge signal, because at 6 o'clock, there is a little light that'll go off when it has a full charge. And it only charges 3 days, okay?
Right.
I'll give you a little link as to what it looks like here. But it's a pretty, it's a pretty darn clean watch. And it's got a huge crown. And the reason why it has a huge crown is because it takes about 3 minutes of continuous winding to bring it to full charge.
Interesting.
So you're really winding and winding and winding this little guy. They're extremely rare. Okay. I can't find any that are anywhere online. If anyone wants to sell me one, I'll give you above market price.
So
they're pretty darn cool.
So you're basically, so it's quartz movement, but you're basically charging the quartz
manual wind
battery.
It. Yeah.
Okay.
So, this was 1986. Okay. And so basically what they have is they have the crown, and then the crown has a powertrain of gears, right? Where they're turning your like slow spinning into like really fast angular spin with low torque. And then they're basically using the general setup of having a spinning magnet and coils of wire around it to generate electricity.
Yeah. To charge it, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So you'd probably need a pretty lot of room to make all those things work in there. That's probably why the case is so thick.
Yeah, this thing is definitely not like one of the quartz movements that you see today where it's just in the very center of the watch and there's a bunch of empty space. This one's probably packed. Now, it's once you've created that power that I was talking about with the coil and the magnet spinning, right? That creates AC power, just like in a power plant. But, of course, for electronics like this, you need DC power. So it's got a rectifier circuit in there to change AC to DC power. And then the 3-day power reserve is not a battery. It's a capacitor. So.
Oh, so yeah. So it won't die like a lithium ion or something like that.
Well, it's just, I don't know why they made that choice, honestly. I'm not a big electronics guy.
Well, I can tell you just because this is just a guess from me. But if you ever shop for dash cams, dash cams don't have battery. Like, some of them have little batteries, but most of them, they don't have big batteries because they're running off the car power, right?
Mm-hmm.
But some of them have a little lithium ion just to keep it on for a little longer. But the thing is, those aren't good in hot weather because for some reason, if it's too hot, the lithium ion battery is going to like bulge
discharge
and explode.
Quickly.
Like,
oh,
right?
Okay.
So a lot of the nicer dash cams have capacitor based batteries because temperature has no effect on them. Like you can, in especially hot environments like California or Florida, that's what you want because they're sitting in your dash and it's hot in the car, right?
Mm.
So I don't know. That's one thing I've seen between a reason why people like capacitor batteries.
Yeah. Now the full charge signal, I want to describe it for people a little bit. Kind of looks like a field watch a little bit.
Yeah.
It's got the big crown. It's got day date. It's got a red seconds hand and then baton hands for hours and minutes. And it's clean. That's a pretty clean dial.
Yeah. Very utilitarian.
Yeah, so I love the look of this watch. If anyone's got one out there, message me on Instagram. Probably pick it up off you. It seems like there's not a big interest in them, but there just were like none made. So there's just the people who have them, I guess. Now, it's interesting. The same year that they released this commercially, they showed off the concept for Kinetic Quartz, which is what I'm trying to get to, at Baselworld the same year.
Oh.
So basically, at Baselworld, they showed off this same kind of mechanism idea, except with automatic winding. So you don't have to do the 3 minutes per day winding it up, whenever you want to wind it. So it's a very similar idea. And the generator pinion, because you have to have some pretty fast speeds to generate AC electricity, right?
Right.
Just based on the movement to the counterweight, the generator pinion, just based off of the gear ratios and everything, can spin up to 100,000 RPM.
Wow.
To generate
Well, that's fast.
It is, just based on, like, the movement of your, like, weight. So, it's a little bit of a fancy thing. Kinetic quartz, nowadays, I feel like is kind of garbage.
Okay.
Because it's got the automatic and stuff, but there's just no reason to have an automatic winding weight in there. You could just do eco drive.
Yes, yes, that's, you know what I'm that, saying? That, they made a big deal out of that when that first came out.
Yeah, and eco drive is on our list. And in fact, okay, since I said that, it's not technically next, but I'm just going to jump to it because, yeah. Because okay. Why not? So eco drive, I'm just going to throw up a random eco drive for you to look at here. Citizen, the vast majority of all the watches they produce are eco drives, apparently, as far as the market goes. And this is a kind of a standard diver to suggest to someone, the ProMaster Professional Eco Drive from Citizen. So it's a chunky diver. It's got fat arrow hands. And what I've heard is this thing has crazy strong loom. Comes in at $210 on Amazon right now, and it'll last forever.
So Eco Drive is basically solar. Right?
It's basically solar. And it's just I'm not exactly sure what the... they've got some sort of patent, but I'm unsure where the special patent part comes. Because there's other solar watches where the solar panel, it's like, you can see the solar panel. You're like, I know it's there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But with Eco Drives, you can never see the solar panel.
I like that better. It's like more stealthy.
It is stealthy. So I'll tell you how that works. So at one point, I thought that the dial must somehow be a solar panel, you know, and you just can't see the circuitry in it for some reason. Not true. Basically, they are just a dial that's a special ceramic, and it's almost entirely opaque. Almost entirely. Oh. But light actually goes through the dial.
Interesting.
So it's kind of like a one-way mirror type setup.
Yes.
So there is a photocell. It's called an amorphous silicon photocell. And that's behind the dial, and that's just picking up the small amounts that are let of light that are let through.
Right.
Supposedly, the very early eco drives, you can actually make out the photocell. But today that's not the case. And they also have a special battery in there, and I'm not sure what the importance of it is, but it's a titanium lithium ion battery.
So it says on their marketing materials, recharges continuously in any light 24 hours, no battery change required. So again, it goes back to the thing like, doesn't this battery like die out? Because even rechargeable batteries go bad after a while. So they have to have some sort of special sauce to have that same battery that you never have to change out.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the whole titanium lithium ion thing. Maybe the battery is just a very high quality. But I mean, 10 years of a eco drive is like nothing. I have a feeling these things will be running 50 years on.
Yeah.
So if you're talking apocalypse watches, this is actually what you should get to survive the apocalypse. If you're a prepper and you got your bunker, there should be an eco drive in there. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, and it doesn't even need to be solar light. It says it could use artificial light too, which is cool.
Yeah, very low amounts of light will charge this thing, which is surprising to me because the dial is so opaque. It's only letting in a small amount of light.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's got to be very efficient.
Yeah, which is crazy because solar just natively is not that efficient yet. Like even like a solar roof panel.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, you have to be in the right kind of climate for solar to make sense.
Yeah.
Now, there are some special things that you can get for your eco drive. Of course, there are basic eco drives, but if you get some of the nicer ones, they have some special abilities. So for example, some of them can hibernate. So if it's sensing that it's not getting any charge, the hands will stop and the internal quartz movement will continue to track time. But that actually requires a lot less energy than moving the hands. Moving the hands is the majority of the power.
Yeah, because it's like physical movement, mechanical movement.
Yeah, and when it sees light again, the hands will start moving automatically, and they'll resume the positions that are correct.
Oh. But can it be the case where even that internal time keeper thing loses energy too if it just sits in a drawer all day?
it could die out.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, you can get some of these that can last over a year without seeing light.
Okay.
So if you have one that has this hibernation ability too, maybe that stretches it out even more.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it's kind of a fun little difference from regular quartz. Not massively different, but, you know, a lot of people ask about EcoDrive and stuff, so I thought it'd be worth taking a moment to talk about The other thing
I remember when this first came out, sorry to interrupt you, I wanted one because it was so cool.
Yeah, they are cool. And they also make kinetic quartz look stupid. Like, I don't know why you'd want kinetic quartz when you could just have an EcoDrive.
Yeah, yeah.
Although, with the exception of the fact that I would love to get the original full charge signal. That thing is sweet.
Yeah, yeah.
Just for the history and how weird it is. But yeah. The EcoDrive is definitely the better technology. Now, I found a bit of a fancy EcoDrive. Came out for just a few years. And
limited edition.
They're really hard to find. Not that they're limited edition, but they have a whole different way of generating electricity. Okay.
But it's still EcoDrive, right?
Well, that's just branding.
Oh, okay.
So this is called the EcoDrive Thermo, and it looks very much like its time period. Okay. It doesn't exactly look normal on your wrist today, but the Thermo, it has little grooves around the bezel area, and
yeah,
what it's
I
actually
think that looks ugly.
It kind of looks ugly. What it's doing there is actually increasing the surface area of the watch. And then it's got a bracelet that's sort of like a Vacheron Constantin Overseas with the bracelet type setup.
Yeah, yeah.
If I'm remembering the Gerald Genta designs, they do blend together. what is the one that you want?
The Nautilus.
The Nautilus. I'm talking about the Nautilus. It's a little bit more Nautilus-y with that center H-Link style bracelet.
Yeah, but this looks like it's got, like, I don't know what that black stripe is. It looks leather, or maybe I don't know what it is.
I have no idea what that is.
I don't think it's metal.
Yeah, I think it's trying to pull heat away from the dial, because the way that this works is it's a C-back generator inside of there, okay?
Okay.
So basically what this is doing is if you have two dissimilar conductors that are touching each other, and then you have a heat differential across them, you get a small amount of current, okay?
Yeah, a voltage.
Yeah, and some things are better at doing that than others. What's doing it in this is bismuth telluride. So
okay,
it's using the temperature difference between your arm and the air to create electricity. Okay. So you'll actually notice that the watch itself, the case back sits on your wrist, but if you see like side pictures of this thing, the case back is like kind of tall, and it's like pushing the watch away from your wrist a little bit so that the dial is further away.
So
you don't
heat it up too much. It get a bit better difference in temperature.
Exactly. Yeah. And so,
but the problem that I could foresee is that what if you're in an air temperature that's the same temperature as your body?
Exactly. And that's why these were discontinued, because anywhere that's like a hot place to live, they're useless.
Yeah.
But they're pretty unusual. They were made for a very short period of time, and they're kind of like, I don't want to say that they're the same as the Seiko full charge signal, because the full charge is definitely rarer than this, but this is pretty hard to find. Like, if you go on eBay right now, there is one of them.
Okay. How much is it? They're not that expensive, are they?
It's hard to say a market price when you've only got one person trying to sell it, you know what I'm saying? But
yeah, yeah.
That person's asking $750, but he's got box and papers, which is pretty weird.
Okay, like, I appreciate the ingenuity and the technology of this, but I just think this watch looks, like, very not good.
You have to be able to pull off something special.
Yeah. I could see it being used in a sci-fi movie in the early 90s or something like that.
Yeah, it looks like a watch that belongs in a sci-fi movie. It really does.
Yeah.
An old sci-fi movie.
Yes, yeah.
Now, how many... Okay, so we've talked about, like, kinetic quartz, okay? We've talked about winding the full charge signal for 3 minutes. How long do you think you have to wear this thing to get a full charge? On average.
To get, so from zero to full charge?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd guess a day.
50 days.
So that means if it's not even charged, it would take a while for it to even start moving when you put it on.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't say personally, but I wouldn't be surprised if you had to wear it for an hour or two before it started ticking.
Yeah, if you extrapolate from 50 days.
Yeah, yeah.
I can see why they discontinued this.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know what? Like, it's got to be, like, because the greater the temperature difference, the more it's going to charge, I assume. So
if you wore this out in Canadian winter, presumably it would charge relatively fast.
You would think, right?
Maybe 10 days.
Yeah. You could supercharge it.
Yeah. Now, we've all seen the sort of thing where the watch kind of like is telling you that it's running out of battery for quartz, where it'll just like only go every other second, for example.
Yeah.
So that it has to move less. This one, when it's low on batteries, the second hand will only move every 10 seconds. Because it basically has no battery to start with most of the time. But they do say that once you've charged it up completely, so almost 2 months of continuous wear, once you've done that, then it'll go 6 months.
Once you've slogged through the... Okay. 6 months... Okay, so it's got 6 month power reserve, basically.
Yeah, which isn't so bad.
That's not bad.
Yeah. But it is a pretty unusual watch. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, it's got that going for it, for sure.
Yeah, so if you're just one of those people that wants to own something crazy, something that's different tech that literally nobody will ever have seen before, and you're like the nerdiest watch nerd of all time, this is kind of sweet.
This is it. Yeah. I mean, just looking at it again, I don't even think you could change the bracelet because that black thing attaches to it.
No, I don't think you can. And even if you could, I don't know if you'd want to, because I think this thing is designed to be pulling...
It's pulling heat. It's like from part of the mechanism.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, and honestly, the more that I look at it, the more it grows on me.
Not for me.
But I'll let someone else snipe it on eBay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think it's a pretty cool one. And it's actually obtainable, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sort of.
For that price, and it's for that kind of uniqueness, I think it's not a bad value proposition if you're into it.
Yeah, yeah. Some things are so unique, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And then another one that I want to talk about is Spring Drive. Okay,
that's a big one.
Yeah, because we talked about Spring Drive before, but I hadn't really looked into it enough to give definitively how it works or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was just giving generalities of just some of the things that I had heard and some of the things that make sense. But now, I've actually looked it up. Now, of course, you know what Spring Drive looks like, but I'm just going to throw in a little something for you to look at and for our listeners to look at, which I think is the biggest mistake Seiko has made in recent years. Which is that they put a Spring Drive in a non-Grand Seiko.
Okay, yeah, because I was like, I thought you're a fan of Grand Seiko and Spring Drive.
They put it in a Seiko Presage, which I think is a mistake.
But Presage is like they're higher in Seiko, but yeah, it is not Grand Seiko.
Yeah, it's not Grand Seiko, and it's just like, I think it's such a mistake. I think Presage, honestly, I think what Seiko is trying to do is, like, the reason why a lot of their models are getting more expensive now is because of the confusion with, like, when someone sees a Seiko and then they see a Grand Seiko and they're like, why should I pay 100 times more? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
But if you make it 20 times more, then it starts to make more sense in their brain, just marketing or whatever.
Well, I think another thing they want to do is push down the technology to make it more obtainable, and then you might start looking at Grand Seiko. Because we might not even know about Spring Drive, you know, because the price is so expensive.
This is like almost the cost of a Grand Seiko anyway. It's $4,000.
Oh, okay. I didn't know it was that expensive.
Yeah, so I feel like this is just brand confusion, this model. And I'm against it, man. I'm against putting. I don't even think that I like the presage line at all.
That's a pretty big line.
Yeah,
there's a lot of watches in the presage line.
Just like if I was running Seiko or whatever, I could see, because presage right now seems to mean a little bit more expensive.
Yeah, a I higher feel end like Seiko.
I feel like Grand Seiko should mean expensive. Regular Seiko should mean regular price. And there shouldn't be something in between kind of confusing customers.
So there shouldn't even be a presage line is what you're saying?
No. Or there could be a presage line, but it just costs as much as everything else. And it's just their dress watch line, which it kind of is the dress watch line.
Yeah,
but it's
yeah,
just it is, more expensive than like their divers and stuff. I'm saying it should be like the cost of all their other watches.
Yeah, I mean, Seiko's got so many mini lines within Seiko. Like, Seiko is, like, you know, they don't have it as segregated out like something like Rolex. So it's all over the place.
Yeah, and that's the hardest thing for Seiko, I think. And
yeah,
so
yeah.
I feel like this was just, like, a really terrible idea. I don't think they should be putting spring drives in anything that's not a Grand Seiko.
So you think it's like a higher-end kind of technology that should be saved for the more expensive stuff?
Yeah. Give people a reason to buy that more expensive stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's explain this technology. Although this watch is pretty... I mean, aside my thinking that it's wrong for the company, this watch on its own looks nice.
I mean, yeah, you're getting a spring drive in a non-Grand Seiko.
Yeah, it's basically a perfectly white ceramic dial. It's got the little power reserve, Grand Seiko spring drive power reserve thing. Got a date, big
the crown is nice.
Crown's nice, and then it's got big black Arabics around it. Dress watch style. And the dial is like sunk in pretty far from the bezel.
Yeah.
Like noticeably different than the average watch.
It's kind of subtle, actually.
So let's talk about spring drive. So we had talked about it before, how it's got mainspring in a barrel. That's what gives it its power, and it's got the gear train, right?
Right, yeah.
And that is all what we expect. So the different thing, though, is that the gear train, I was trying to find like pictures of these taken apart and stuff, but it was actually hard for me to find it. But what I had noticed pretty quickly when I saw that is that there's more wheels in the gear train.
Oh, okay.
So normally, when you spring... When you move the barrel just a little bit, your escape wheel spins like crazy.
Okay.
Because of all of the gear ratios between all the little gears, you know, we're turning torque into angular momentum this way.
Uh-huh.
But with spring drive, it needs even more spinny at the end of the at the end of the thing, basically.
Yeah.
And so the last wheel is called the glide wheel. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, the glide wheel is regulated by what they call a tri-synchro regulator. Okay. Now,
yeah.
The way that this works is complicated enough to understand that once I understood it, I realized that one of the explanatory articles that I was reading had a mistake in it.
Yeah.
So even people who are trying to explain it have trouble. So... it's a little bit complicated, but also simple and genius all at the same time.
Yeah.
So basically, you have this glide wheel. It's spinning, and the glide wheel, kind of like our kinetic quartz and our full signal,
mm-hmm.
It is creating electrical current as it spins. Okay, so the glide wheel is being a little generator. And it creates very, very little electrical current, I want to say. If you took, like, all the spring drives out there, all of them running right now, they could not run my monitor. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, so little energy.
Yeah, so extremely little energy. And so this current that it's creating, it has an integrated circuit with a quartz oscillator, okay?
Yeah.
So normally we were talking in the quartz episode about how you have a binary counter and then it's got an overflow and then that's how it knows that a second has passed, blah, 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 right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's not how spring drive works. So the way spring drives works is it's got the quartz oscillator. Now you can imagine if you just put a tiny bit of voltage in there, then it is going to have a lower frequency. And then as you increase the voltage, it'll have a higher frequency.
Right, that's how quartz works.
Yeah. So basically what happens is it's using the quartz oscillator as a reference point. Okay. So mm-hmm. if it sees that the oscillator is too low of a frequency, then there's not enough voltage, which means that they're breaking too hard on the glide wheel. And so it will do less electronic braking on the glide wheel so that it can create more voltage.
Oh, so it like regulates itself.
Yeah. So at the end of this thing, there is a little electromagnet next to the glide wheel, and it's turning that on all the time to brake the escapement. Okay. And so does it need to brake more or does it need to brake less? Well, if it needs to brake more, that's because the quartz oscillator is too high of a frequency. And if it's too low of a frequency, then it'll break a little bit less so that it can be even all the time.
Yeah.
And that's why the hand moves super evenly, because it's just a smoothly breaking glide wheel instead of the typical Swiss lever escapement system where you're literally breaking the escape wheel with your pallet fork jewels. And by breaking, I mean literally stopping, whereas the glide wheel never really stops. It's just has a little bit more resistance or a little bit less resistance. And the cool thing about that is that the electromagnetic braking part, that is also powered by the electricity made by the glide wheel.
Oh. So, man, whoever thought of this was really innovative.
Yeah, so everything is powered by the glide wheel, and it regulates itself, right?
Which is why they advertise it to be so accurate.
Yeah, it is very accurate. It is less accurate than if they did just a fully quartz with a battery type system.
Right.
But it's still within, like, I want to say plus or minus 1 second a day.
Right.
Which is very accurate.
I mean, just them showing the movement right there looks nicer than a quartz. It looks more like a mechanical movement.
Yeah, it does. And I could tell you that when they say plus or minus one second a day, that actually means that it's way closer to zero. Because that's their maximum drift that you could see on any model coming out of the factory. But probably on average, it's much more accurate.
Oh, interesting. It's just like the worst case scenario.
Yeah, they're just giving themselves room to breathe. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
So it's a very cool system, and I think the best one on this list. I think it's pretty awesome. The second most innovative one being probably the Citizen EcoDrive Thermo.
but it's not practical, but it's innovative. But I like the solar EcoDrive. I think that's more practical.
That's on this list, I think, the most practical watch for just your average person. That thing is massively practical.
Yeah.
But
the spring drive, I could totally see why Grand Seiko is like trying to compete with higher end watchmakers with that.
Yeah, if I would own any of these, let's talk about the list. Let's say they all cost the same.
Okay.
Okay.
That's a big assumption, but okay.
Yeah, let's say they all cost the same, and nobody will give you any more cred for owning which one. Which ones would you be interested in?
Okay, so
do you need the list again?
No. But because I already thought about this question, and I'm gonna give you an answer, but with a caveat.
Okay.
So I would want the spring drive because it's the most like, to me, it's the most like a mechanical. But it's like an enhanced mechanical to me. But like I've mentioned before, I do not like the spring drive meter that is in a lot of this. Like if they just took that out and had a clean.
They do have ones without the meter.
Okay, so then that's the thing I like. Because I know you're a fan of that meter, but I'm not. So I like the spring drive, but I don't like the meter thing.
You know, honestly, the more that I've thought about it, the less that I've liked the power reserve on the
like I could see why they put it there. I can see why people like that, because it's like it's almost like it shows you the charge, but to me it's almost like, you know, when I'm looking at my phone, I see the battery percentage just like that. Like I don't want to see that on a watch.
Yeah, I mean, my thing about it The reason why I think maybe it's not so great for Grand Seiko is because Grand Seiko has such awesome dials and just like insane textures and stuff. And breaking that up with that meter, that's why I don't like it. But I like it on some other watches.
I mean, it's got, obviously, it's got practical use to see, you know, how much reserve you have left.
Yeah. Now, I think, so do you have a second place or a third place for these watches?
Second place, probably. See, I would, like, the thermo, like, it's cool, but I just don't like that watch. So I can't, like, you know, like, it's like, so I can't go with that one, but I would say EcoDrive because the Solar EcoDrive, because I wanted one of those when they first came out. And I think that's a cool idea.
Mm-hmm. I think if I had to give myself a top three, I think number one would be Spring Drive.
Right,
it's just so good.
Yeah.
Number two would be the Seiko Full Charge Signal.
Yeah, that one was interesting.
Manual wind quartz watch. I just think it's. It's hilarious.
But because I know you're a fan of manual wind mechanical anyway, so.
Yeah, exactly. I want to wind it. You know, that's exciting. And then the last one, if I gave a third place, I'd give it to the Oyster Quartz.
Okay.
Because actually, I like that case design and stuff. It's a little bit different.
Yeah, I like the case design, but if we're talking about the movement too, the case design is really nice. Do you know if they make that for their mechanical movement?
The case design?
Yeah.
No.
Of that particular... That's unfortunate.
I don't think that they have ones like that, but I am not a Rolex expert. There are so many people who know more about Rolex. I don't know anything about Rolex, basically, but I haven't seen any Rolexes that have that sort of case design.
Yeah.
I feel like they're trying to look more technical and new age.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. It's definitely like a more modern design for what they're classically known for.
Yeah, yeah. So those are all the different movements.
Alternative movements.
Yeah, and you notice pretty much all of these were like alternate versions of quartz or like fun things to do with quartz.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, maybe one day we'll do the different escapement types of mechanical, but it's just very complex. I don't know how you'd ever describe it. So
yeah, you need to have like, be very descriptive because we don't have visuals.
It would be like, oh, and then you have the one arm, and then perpendicular to that there's a wheel, and then on that wheel there's some different, it's like, I don't know how you'd explain it.
Well, I think first of all you'd need someone who can grasp the basic concepts.
Yeah, they're also very complicated and I don't know them.
Yeah Well, that was interesting.
So what I'd like to say is, we'd still like for you to rate us on iTunes. That'd be great.
Yeah.
as you mentioned, I'm going crazy with the Instagram. So if you want to follow us there, there are pictures coming out on the daily these days.
Yeah.
And of course, if you have any suggestions and stuff, we've had a lot of topics, a lot of people thrown in some corrections for us and stuff, and we love that. So if you want to communicate, love that too.
Yeah, let us know which of these alternative movements you guys are a fan of.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, go through those links. I know a lot of you probably just listen and don't go through the links. These ones are pretty sweet.
Yeah, I agree.
So we'll see you next week. We'll continue to discuss gears, springs, oils, watches, brands, all things watches and watchmaking.
We'll see you guys next week.